However, Breeze felt a simple contentment. Soothing was wonderful. It made him who he was. But it was also work. Even birds couldn't fly all the time.
"There you are!"
Breeze snapped his eyes open. Oriane stood at the entrance to the room, just at the edge of the table. She wore light blue. Where had she gotten so many dresses? Her makeup was, of course, immaculate, and there was a bow in her hair. That long, blonde hair, common in the West, but almost unheard of in the Central Dominance, and that perky, inviting figure. Desire immediately blossomed inside of him.
"No," Breeze thought. "She's half your age. You're a dirty old man. Dirty."
"Oriane," he said uncomfortably, "shouldn't you be in bed or something?" She rolled her eyes, shooing his legs out of the way so she could sit on the bench beside him.
"It's only 9 o'clock, Breeze. I'm 18, not 10.
"You might as well be," he thought, looking away from her, trying to focus on something else. He knew that he should be stronger, shouldn't let the girl get near him. But he did nothing as she slid up to him and took a drink from his cup. He sighed, putting his arm around her shoulders. Clubs just shook his head, the hint of a smile on his lips.
"Well," Vin said quietly, "that answers one question."
"Mistress," Orsier said, sitting across the table from her in the dark room.
With her Allomancer's ears, she could hear exactly what was going on in the next booth-like room over.
"Oriane is an Allomancer," Vin said.
"Really?"
Vin nodded.
"She's been riding Breeze's emotions ever since she arrived, making him more attracted to her."
"One would think that he'd notice," Orsier said.
"You'd think," Vin said. She probably shouldn't feel as amused as she did. The girl could be a Mistborn, though the idea of that puff flying through the mists seemed ridiculous.
"Which is probably exactly how she wants me to think," Vin thought. "I have to remember Cliss and Shan. Neither one of them turned out to be the person I thought they were."
"Breeze probably just doesn't think his emotions are unnatural," Vin said. "He must be attracted to her already." Orsier closed his mouth and cocked his head, his dog's version of a frown.
"I know," Vin agreed, "but at least we know he isn't the one using Allomancy to seduce her. Either way, that's irrelevant. Clubs isn't the Chandra."
"How could you possibly know that, mistress?"
Vin paused. Clubs always turned his copper on around Breeze. It was one of the few times he used it. However, it was difficult to tell if someone was burning copper. After all, if they turned on their metal, they hid themselves by default. But Vin could pierce copper clouds. She could sense Alrian's riding. She could even sense a faint thumping coming from Clubs himself. Copper's own allomantic pulse, something that Vin suspected few people beyond herself and the Lord Ruler had ever heard.
"I just know," Vin said.
"If you say so, mistress," Orsier said. "But didn't you already decide the spy was Demu?"
"I wanted to check Clubs anyway," she said, "before I did anything drastic."
"Drastic?"
Vin sat quietly for a moment. She didn't have much proof, but she did have her instincts, and those instincts told her Demu was the spy. That sneaking way he'd gone out the other night, the obvious logic of choosing him, it all fit. She stood. Things were getting too dangerous, too sensitive. She couldn't ignore it any longer.
"Come on," she said, leaving the booth behind. "It's time to put Demu in prison."
"What do you mean you lost him?" Vin asked, standing outside the door to Demu's room. The servant flushed.
"Milady, I'm sorry. I watched him, like you told me, but he went out on patrol. Should I have followed? I mean, don't you think that would have looked suspicious?"
Vin cursed quietly to herself. She knew that she didn't have much right to be angry, however.
I should have told Ham straight off, she thought with frustration.
"'M'lady, he only left a few minutes ago,' the servant said.
Vin glanced at Orsieur, then took off down the corridor. As soon as they reached a window, Vin leaped out into the dark night, Orsieur following behind her, dropping the short distance to the courtyard.
"'Last time I saw him come back in through the gates to the palace grounds,' she thought, running through the mist. She found a couple of soldiers there, guarding.
"'Did Captain Demieux come this way?' she demanded, bursting into their ring of torchlight.
They perked up, at first shocked, then confused.
"'Lady Eyre?' one of them said. "'Yes, he just went out. On patrol just a minute or two ago.'
"'By himself?' Vin asked.
They nodded.
"'Isn't that a little odd?'
They shrugged.
"'He goes by himself sometimes,' one said. "'We don't question. He's our superior, after all.'
"'Which way?' Vin demanded.
One pointed, and Vin took off, Orsieur at her side.
"'I should have watched better. I should have hired real spies to keep an eye on him. I should have—'
She froze. Up ahead, walking down a quiet street in the mists, was a figure walking into the city. Demieux. Vin dropped a coin and threw herself into the air, passing far over his head, landing on top of a building. He continued, oblivious. Demieux or Condra, neither would have allomantic powers. Vin paused, daggers out, ready to spring. But she still didn't have any real proof. The part of her that Kelsier had transformed, the part that had come to trust, thought of the Demieux she knew.
"'Do I really believe he's the Condra?' she thought. "'Or do I just want him to be the Condra, so that I don't have to suspect my real friends?'
He continued to walk below, her tin-enhanced ears easily picking out his footfalls. Behind, Orsieur scrambled up onto the top of the roof, then padded over and sat down beside her.
"'I can't just attack,' she thought. "'I need to at least watch, see where he's going, get proof.
Perhaps learn something in the process.' She waved to Orsieur, and they quietly followed along the rooftops, trailing Demieux. Soon, Vin noticed something odd. A flicker of firelight illuminating the mists a few streets over, making haunted shadows of buildings. Vin glanced at Demieux, trailing him with her eyes as he wandered down an alleyway, moving toward the illumination.
What?
Vin threw herself off the roof. It took only 3 bounds for her to reach the source of the light. A modest bonfire crackled in the center of a small square. Ska huddled around it for warmth, looking a little frightened in the mists. Vin was surprised to see them. She hadn't seen Ska go out in the mists since the night of the collapse. Demieux approached down a side street, greeting several of the others. In the firelight, she could confirm for certain that it was him, or at least a Condra with his face. There were perhaps 200 people in the square. Demieux moved as if to sit on the cobblestones, but someone quickly approached with a chair. A young woman brought him a mug of something steaming, which he received gratefully. Vin leaped to a rooftop, staying low to keep from being exposed by the firelight. More ska arrived, mostly in groups, but some brave individuals came alone. A sound came from behind her, and Vin turned as Orsieur, apparently having barely made the jump, scrambled the last few feet over the edge onto the roof. He glanced down at the street below, shook his head, then padded over to join her. She raised a finger to her lips, nodding down at the growing group of people. Orsieur cocked his head at the sight, but said nothing. Finally, Demieux stood, holding the still-steaming cup in his hands. People gathered around, sitting on the cold cobblestones, huddled beneath blankets or cloaks.
"'We shouldn't fear the mists, my friends,' Demieux said.
His wasn't the voice of a strong leader or forceful battle commander. It was the voice of hardened youth, a little hesitant, but compelling nonetheless.
"'The survivor taught us of this,' he continued. "'I know it's very hard to think of the mists without remembering stories of mist wraiths or other horrors. But the survivor gave the mists to us.' We should try and remember him through them.
Lord Ruler, Vin thought with shock. He's one of them. A member of the Church of the Survivor.
She wavered, uncertain what to think. Was he the Chondra, or wasn't he? Why would the Chondra meet with a group of people like this? But why would Demu himself do it?
I know it's hard, Demu said below, without the Survivor. I know you're afraid of the armies. Trust me, I know. I see them too. I know you suffer beneath this siege. I don't know if I can even tell you not to worry. The Survivor himself knew great hardship, the death of his wife, his imprisonment in the pits of Hathsin. But he survived. That's the point, isn't it? We have to live on, no matter how hard this all gets. We'll win in the end. Just like he did.
He stood with his mug in his hands, looking nothing like the ska preachers Vin had seen. Kelsier had chosen a passionate man to found his religion, or more precisely, to found the revolution the religion had come from. Kelsier had needed leaders who could inflame supporters, whip them up into a destructive upheaval. Demu was something different. He didn't shout, but spoke calmly, yet people paid attention. They sat on the stones around him, looking up with hopeful, even worshipful eyes.
"The Lady Eir," one of them whispered. "What of her?"
"Lady Vin bears a great responsibility," Demu said. "You can see the weight bowing her down, and how frustrated she is with the problems in the city. She is a straightforward woman, and I don't think she likes the Assembly's politicking."
"But she'll protect us, right?" one asked.
"Yes," Demu said. "Yes, I believe she will. Sometimes I think that she's even more powerful than the Survivor was. You know that he only had 2 years to practice as a Mistborn. She's barely had that much time herself."
Vin turned away. "It comes back to that," she thought. "They sound rational until they talk about me, and then..."
"She'll bring us peace someday," Demu said. "The air will bring back the sun, stop the ash from falling. But we have to survive until then. And we have to fight. The Survivor's entire work was to see the Lord Ruler dead and make us free. What gratitude do we show if we run now that armies have come? Go and tell your Assemblymen that you don't want Lord Set or even Lord Penrod to be your king. The vote happens in 1 day, and we need to make certain the right man is made king. The Survivor chose Elland Venture, and that is whom we must follow."
That's new, Vin thought.
"Lord Elland is weak," one of the people said. "He won't defend us."
"Lady Vin loves him," Demu said. "She wouldn't love a weak man. Penrod and Set treat you like the ska used to be treated, and that's why you think they're strong. But that's not strength. It's oppression. We have to be better than that. We have to trust the Survivor's judgment."
Vin relaxed against the lip of the roof, tension melting a bit. If Demu really was the spy, then he wasn't going to give her any evidence this night. So she put her knives away, then rested with her arms folded on the rooftop's edge. The fire crackled in the cool winter evening, sending billows of smoke to mix with the mists, and Demu continued to speak in his quiet, reassuring voice, teaching the people about Kelsier.
"It's not even really a religion," Vin thought as she listened. "The theology is so simple. Not at all like the complex beliefs that Sazed speaks about."
Demu taught basic concepts. He held up Kelsier as a model, talking about survival and about enduring hardships. Vin could see why the direct words would appeal to the ska. The people really only had 2 choices, to struggle on or to give up. Demu's teachings gave them an excuse to keep living. The ska didn't need rituals, prayers, or codes. Not yet. They were too inexperienced with religion in general, too frightened of it to want such things. But the more she listened, the more Vin understood the Church of the Survivor. It was what they needed. It took what the ska already knew, a life filled with hardship, and elevated it to a higher, more optimistic plane. And the teachings were still evolving.
The deification of Kelsier she had expected. Even the reverence for her was understandable. But where did Demu get the promises that Vin would stop the ash and bring back the sun? How did he know to preach of green grasses and blue skies, describing the world as it was known only in some of the world's most obscure texts? He described a strange world of colors and beauty, a place foreign and difficult to conceive, but somehow wonderful all the same. Flowers and green plants were strange, alien things to these people. Even Vin had trouble visualizing them, and she had heard Sazed's descriptions. Demu was giving the ska a paradise. It had to be something completely removed from normal experience, for the mundane world was not a place of hope. Not with a foodless winter approaching, not with armies threatening, and the government in turmoil. Vin pulled back as Demu finally ended the meeting. She lay for a moment, trying to decide how she felt. She'd been near certain about Demu, but now her suspicions seemed unfounded. He'd gone out at night, true, but she saw now what he was doing. Plus, he'd acted so suspiciously when sneaking out. It seemed to her, as she reflected, that a Chandra would know how to go about things in a much more natural way. "It's not him," she thought. "Or if it is, he's not going to be as easy to unmask as I thought." She frowned in frustration. Finally, she just sighed, rising, and walked to the other side of the roof. Orsir followed, and Vin glanced at him. "When Kelsier told you to take his body," she said, "what did he want you to preach to these people?"
"Mistress?" Orsir asked.
"He had you appear as if you were him returned from the grave."
"Yes."
"Well, what did he have you say?"
Orsir shrugged. "Very simple things, mistress. I told them that the time for rebellion had arrived. I told them that I, Kelsier, had returned to give them hope for victory."
"I represent that thing you've never been able to kill, no matter how hard you try." They had been Kelsier's final words, spoken face to face with the Lord Ruler. "I am hope. I am hope." Was it any wonder that this concept would become central to the church that sprang up around him? "Did he have you teach things like we just heard Demu say?" Vin asked. "About the ash no longer falling and the sun turning yellow?"
"No, mistress."
"That's what I thought," Vin said as she heard rustling on the stones below. She glanced over the side of the building and saw Demu returning to the palace. Vin dropped to the alleyway floor behind him. To the man's credit, he heard her and he spun, hand on dueling cane.
"Peace, Captain," she said, rising.
"Lady Vin?"
he asked with surprise. She nodded, approaching closer so that he'd be able to see her better in the night. Fading torchlight still lit the air from behind, swirls of mist playing with shadows.
"I didn't know you were a member of the Church of the Survivor," she said softly.
He looked down. Though he was easily two hands taller than she, he seemed to shrink a bit before her.
I know it makes you uncomfortable. I'm sorry."
"It's all right," she said. "You do a good thing for the people. Ellen will appreciate hearing of your loyalty."
Demu looked up.
"Do you have to tell him?"
"He needs to know what the people believe, Captain. Why would you want me to keep it quiet?"
Demu sighed.
I don't want the crew to think I'm out here pandering to the people. Ham says preaching about the survivor is silly, and Lord Breeze says the only reason to encourage the church is to make people more pliant."
Vin regarded him in the darkness.
"You really believe, don't you?"
"Yes, m'lady."
"But you knew Kelsier," she said. "You were with us from near the beginning. You know he's no god." Demu looked up, a bit of a challenge in his eyes.
"He died to overthrow the Lord Ruler.
That doesn't make him divine."
"He taught us how to survive, to have hope."
"You survived before," Vin said. "People had hope before Kelsier got thrown in those pits."
"Not like we do now," Demu said. "Besides, he had power, m'lady. I felt it."
Vin paused. She knew the story. Kelsier had used Demu as an example to the rest of the army in a fight with a skeptic, directing his blows with allomancy, making Demu seem as if he had supernatural powers.
"Oh, I know about allomancy now," Demu said. "But I felt him pushing on my sword that day. I felt him use me, making me more than I was. I think I can still feel him sometimes, strengthening my arm, guiding my blade."
Vin frowned. "Do you remember the first time we met?" Demu nodded.
"Yes. You came to the caverns where we were hiding on the day when the army was destroyed. I was on guard duty. You know, m'lady, even then I knew that Kelsier would come for us. I knew that he'd come and get those of us who had been faithful and guide us back to Luthadel."
"He went to those caves because I forced him to. He wanted to get himself killed fighting an army on his own."
"The destruction of the army was a test," Demu said, looking up into the mists. "These armies, the siege, they are just tests, to see if we will survive or not."
"And the ash?" Vin asked. "Where did you hear that it would stop falling?"
Demu turned back to her. "The survivor taught that, didn't he?"
Vin shook her head.
"A lot of people are saying it," Demu said. "It must be true. It fits with everything else. The yellow sun, the blue sky, the plants."
"Yes. But where did you first hear those things?"
"I'm not sure, m'lady."
"Where did you hear that I would be the one to bring them about?" she thought, but she somehow couldn't bring herself to voice the question. Regardless, she knew the answer. Demu wouldn't know. Rumors were propagating. It would be difficult indeed to trace them back to their source now. "Go back to the palace," Vin said. "I have to tell Elend what I saw, but I'll ask him not to tell the rest of the crew."
"Thank you, m'lady," Demu said, bowing.
He turned and hurried away. A second later, Vid heard a thump from behind, Orsure jumping down to the street. She turned.
"I was sure it was him."
"Mistress?"
"The Chandra," Vin said, turning back toward the disappearing Demu.
"I thought I'd discovered him."
"And?"
She shook her head.
"It's like Doxin. I think Demu knows too much to be faking. He feels real to me."
"My brethren are quite skilled," Vin said with a sigh.
"Yes, I know. But we're not going to arrest him. Not tonight, at least. We'll keep an eye on him, but I just don't think it's him anymore."
Orsure nodded.
"Come on," she said. "I want to check on Elend."
"And so I come to the focus of my argument. I apologize. Even forcing my words into steel, sitting and scratching in this frozen cave, I am prone to ramble."
37. Sazed glanced at the window shutters, noting the hesitant beams of light that were beginning to shine through the cracks. "Morning already?" he thought. "We studied all night?" It hardly seemed possible. He had tapped no wakefulness, yet he felt more alert, more alive than he had in days. Tyndall sat in the chair beside him. Sazed's desk was filled with loose papers, two sets of ink and pen waiting to be used. There were no books. Keepers had no need of such.
"Ah,"
Tyndall said, grabbing a pen and beginning to write. She didn't look tired either, but she had likely dipped into her bronze mind, tapping the wakefulness stored within. Sazed watched her write. She almost looked young again. He hadn't seen such overt excitement in her since she had been abandoned by the breeders some 10 years before. On that day, her grand work finished, she had finally joined her fellow keepers. Sazed had been the one to present her with the collected knowledge that had been discovered during her 30 years of cloistered childbirth. It hadn't taken her long to achieve a place in the Synod. By then, however, Sazed had been ousted from their ranks. Tyndall finished writing.
"The passage is from a biography of King Wednagon," she said.
He was one of the last leaders who resisted the Lord Ruler in any sort of meaningful combat.
I know who he was, Sacid said, smiling.
She paused.
Of course.
She obviously wasn't accustomed to studying with someone who had access to as much information as she did. She pushed the written passage over to Sacid. Even with his mental indexes and self-notes, it would be faster for her to write out the passage than it would be for him to try and find it within his own copper mines. "I spent a great deal of time with the king during his final weeks," the text read. "He seemed frustrated, as one might imagine. His soldiers could not stand against the conqueror's Kolos, and his men had been beaten back repeatedly ever since Fellspire. However, the king didn't blame his soldiers. He thought that his problems came from another source. Food. He mentioned this idea several times during those last days. He thought that if he'd had more food, he could have held out. In this, Wednegon blamed the deepness. For though the deepness had been defeated, or at least weakened, its touch had depleted Daryl Nye's food stores. His people could not both raise food and resist the conqueror's demon armies. In the end, that was why they fell. Sazed nodded slowly.
How much of this text do we have?
Not much, Tyndall said. 6 or 7 pages. This is the only section that mentions the deepness.
Sazed sat quietly for a moment, rereading the passage. Finally, he looked up at Tyndall.
You think Lady Vin is right, don't you? You think the deepness was missed?
Tyndall nodded.
I agree, Sazed said. At the very least, what we now call the deepness was some sort of change in the mist.
And your arguments from before?
Proven wrong, Sazed said, setting down the paper. By your words and my own studies. I did not wish this to be true, Tyndall.
Tyndall raised an eyebrow.
You defied the Synod again to seek after something you didn't even want to believe?
He looked into her eyes.
There is a difference between fearing something and desiring it. The return of the deepness could destroy us. I did not want this information, but neither could I pass by the opportunity to discover it.
Tyndall looked away.
I do not believe that this will destroy us, Sazed. You have made a grand discovery, that I will admit. The writings of the man Quan tell us much. Indeed, if the deepness was the mists, then our understanding of the Lord Ruler's ascension has been enhanced greatly. And if the mists are growing stronger? Sazed asked. If, by killing the Lord Ruler, we also destroyed whatever force was keeping the mists chained? We have no proof that the mists are coming by day, Tyndall said. And on the possibility of them killing people, we have only your hesitant theories.
Sazed glanced away. On the table, his fingers had smudged Tyndall's hurriedly written words.
That is true, he said.
Tyndall sighed softly in the dim room.
Why do you never defend yourself, Sazed?
What defense is there?
There must be some. You apologize and ask forgiveness, but your apparent guilt never seems to change your behavior. Do you never think that perhaps, if you had been more outspoken, you might be leading the Synod? They cast you out because you refused to offer arguments on your own behalf. You're the most contrite rebel I've ever known.
Sazed didn't respond. He glanced to the side, seeing her concerned eyes. Beautiful eyes.
Foolish thoughts, he told himself, looking away. You've always known that. Some things were meant for others, but never for you. You were right about the Lord Ruler, Sazed, Tyndall said. Perhaps the others would have followed you if you had been just a little more insistent.
Sazed shook his head.
I am not a man from one of your biographies, Tyndall. I am not even really a man. You are a better man than they, Sazed, Tyndall said quietly. The frustrating part is, I've never been able to figure out why.
They fell silent. Sazed rose and walked to the window, opening the shutters, letting in the light. Then he extinguished the room's lamp.
"I will leave today," Tyndall said.
"Leave?" Sazed asked.
"The armies might not let you pass."
"I wasn't going to pass them, Sazed. I plan to visit them. I have given knowledge to young Lord Venture. I need to offer the same aid to his opponents."
"Ah," Sazed said. "I see. I should have realized this."
"I doubt they will listen as he has," Tyndall said, a hint of fondness slipping into her voice.
"Venture is a fine man."
"A fine king," Sazed said. Tyndall didn't respond. She looked at the table with its scattered notations, each drawn from one or another of their copper mines, scribbled in haste, then shown and reread.
What was this night, then? This night of study? This night sharing thoughts and discoveries?
She was still beautiful. Auburn hair graying, but kept long and straight. Face marked by a lifetime of hardship that had not broken her. And eyes. Keen eyes, with the knowledge and love of learning that only a keeper could claim.
"I should not consider these things," Sazed thought again. "There is no purpose to them. There never was." "You must go, then," he said, turning.
"Again, you refuse to argue," she said. "What would be the point of argument? You are a wise and determined person. You must be guided by your own conscience."
"Sometimes people only seem determined upon one course, because they have been offered no other options."
Sazed turned toward her. The room was quiet, the only sounds coming from the courtyard below. Tyndall sat half in sunlight, her bright robes slowly growing more illuminated as the shadows fell away. She seemed to be implying something, something he had not expected to ever hear from her.
"I am confused," he said, sitting back down in a slow motion. "What of your duty as a keeper?"
"It is important," she admitted, "but certain occasional exceptions must be allowed. This rubbing you found, well, perhaps it merits further study before I depart."
Sazed watched her, trying to read her eyes. "What is it I feel?" he wondered. "Confused? Dumbfounded? Afraid?"
"I cannot be what you wish, Tyndall," he said. "I am not a man."
She waved her hand indifferently.
"I have had more than enough of men and childbearing over the years," Sazed. "I have done my duty to the Terrace people. I should like to stay away from them for a time, I think. A part of me resents them for what was done to me."
He opened his mouth to speak, but she held up a hand.
"I know, Sazed. I took that duty upon myself, and am glad for my service. But during the years spent alone, meeting with the keepers only on occasion, I found it frustrating that all their planning seemed to be directed at maintaining their status as a conquered people. I only ever saw one man pushing the Synod toward active measures. While they planned how to keep themselves hidden, one man wanted to attack. While they decided the best ways to foil the breeders, one man wanted to plot the downfall of the final empire. When I rejoined my people, I found that man still fighting, alone. Condemned for fraternizing with thieves and rebels, he quietly accepted his punishment."
She smiled.
"That man went on to free us all."
She took his hand. Sazed sat, astonished.
"The men I read about, Sazed," Tyndall said quietly. "These were not men who sat and planned the best ways to hide. They fought. They sought victory. Sometimes they were reckless, and other men called them fools. Yet when the dice were cast and the bodies counted,
they were men who changed things.
Sunlight entered the room in full, and she sat, cupping his hand in hers. She seemed anxious. Had he ever seen that emotion in her? She was strong, the strongest woman he knew. That couldn't possibly be apprehension he saw in her eyes.
"Give me an excuse, Sazed," she whispered. "I should very much like it if you stayed," Sazed said,
one hand in hers, the other resting on the tabletop, fingers trembling slightly. Tyndall raised an eyebrow.
"Stay," Sazed said. "Please."
Tyndall smiled.
"Very well. You have persuaded me. Let us return to our studies, then."
Elland walked the top of the city wall in the morning light, sword at his hip, clicking against the side of the stonework with each step.
"You almost look like a king," a voice noted.
Elland turned as Ham climbed the last few steps up to the wall walk. The air was brisk, frost still crystalline in shadows on the stone. Winter was approaching. Perhaps it had arrived. Yet Ham wore no cloak, only his usual vest, trousers, and sandals.
"I wonder if he even knows what it is like to be cold," Elland thought. "Pewter. Such an amazing talent."
"You say I nearly look like a king," Elland said, turning to continue walking along the wall as Ham joined him. "I guess Tyndall's clothing has done wonders for my image."
"I didn't mean the clothing," Ham said. "I was talking about that look on your face. How long have you been up here?"
"Hours," Elland said. "How did you find me?"
"The soldiers," Ham said. "They're starting to see you as a commander, Elland. They watch where you are. They stand a little straighter when you're around, polish their weapons if they know you'll be stopping by."
"I thought you didn't spend much time with them," Elland said.
"Oh, I never said that," Ham said. "I spend lots of time with the soldiers. I just can't be intimidating enough to be their commander. Kelsier always wanted me to be a general. I think deep down he thought that befriending people was inferior to leading them. Perhaps he was right. Men need leaders. I just don't want to be one of them."
"I do," Elland said, surprised to hear himself say so. Ham shrugged.
"That's probably a good thing. You are, after all, king."
"Kind of," Elland said.
"You're still wearing the crown."
Elland nodded.
"It felt wrong to go without it. It sounds silly, I know. I only wore it for a short time. But people need to know that someone is still in charge. For a few days more, at least."
They continued to walk. In the distance, Elland could see a shadow upon the land. The Third Army had finally arrived in the wake of the refugees it had sent. Their scouts weren't certain why the Kolos force had taken so long to get to Luthadel. The villagers' sad tale, however, gave some clue. The Kolos had not attacked Straff or Set. They lay waiting. Apparently Jastis had enough control over them to keep them in check. And so they joined the siege, another beast waiting for the opportunity to spring on Luthadel.
"When you can't have both freedom and safety, which do you choose?"
"You seem surprised to realize that you want to be in charge," Ham said.
"I just haven't ever voiced the desire before," Elland said. "It sounds so arrogant when I actually say it. I want to be king. I don't want another man to take my place. Not Penrod, not Set, not anyone. The position is mine. This city is mine."
"I don't know if arrogant is the right word, El," Ham said. "Why do you want to be king?"
"To protect this people," Elland said. "To guard their safety and their rights. But also to make certain that the noblemen don't end up on the wrong end of another rebellion."
"That's not arrogance."
"It is, Ham," Elland said. "But it's an understandable arrogance. I don't think a man could lead without it. Actually, I think it's what I've been missing through most of my reign. Arrogance.
Self-confidence."
"A nicer word for the same concept," Elland said.
I can do a better job for this people than another man could. I just have to find a way to prove that fact to them.
You will.
You're an optimist, Ham, Ellen said.
So are you, Ham noted.
Ellen smiled.
True, but this job is changing me. Well, if you want to keep the job, we should probably get back to studying. We only have one day left.
Ellen shook his head.
I've read all I can, Ham. I will not take advantage of the law, so there's no reason to search for loopholes, and studying other books looking for inspiration just isn't working. I need time to think. Time to walk.
They continued to do so. As they did, Ellen noticed something out in the distance. A group of enemy soldiers doing something he couldn't distinguish. He waved over one of his men.
"What is that?" he asked.
The soldier shaded his eyes, looking.
"Looks like another skirmish between Setsmen and Straffs, Your Majesty."
Ellen raised an eyebrow.
"That happens often?"
The soldier shrugged.
"More and more often lately. Usually the scouting patrols run afoul of each other and get into a conflict, leave a few bodies behind when they retreat. Nothing big, Your Majesty."
Ellen nodded, dismissing the man.
"Big enough," he thought to himself. "Those armies must be as tense as we are. The soldiers can't enjoy remaining so long in a siege, particularly with the winter weather." They were close. The arrival of the Koloss would only cause more chaos. If he shoved right, Straff and Set would be pushed into a head-on battle.
"I just need a little more time," he thought, continuing to walk, Ham at his side. Yet first he needed to get his throne back. Without that authority, he was nothing, and could do nothing. The problem gnawed at his mind. As the walk continued, however, something distracted him. This time something inside the walls rather than outside of them. Ham was right. The soldiers did stand a little taller when Ellen approached their posts. They saluted him, and he nodded to them, walking with hand on pommel, as Tyndall had instructed.
"If I do keep this throne, I owe it to that woman," he thought.
Of course, she'd chastise him for that thought. She would tell him that he kept his throne because he deserved to, because he was king. In changing himself, he had simply used the resources at hand to overcome his challenges. He wasn't certain if he'd ever be able to see things that way. But her final lesson to him the day before, he somehow knew that it was her last, had taught him only one new concept, that there was no one mold for kingship. He would not be like the kings of the past any more than he would be like Kelsier. He would be Elland Venture. His roots were in philosophy, so he would be remembered as a scholar. He'd best use that to his advantage, or he wouldn't be remembered at all. No kings could admit their weaknesses, but they were certainly wise to admit their strengths.
"And what are my strengths?" he thought. "Why should I be the one who rules this city and those around it?"
Yes, he was a scholar, and an optimist, as Ham had noted. He was no master duelist, though he was improving. He wasn't an excellent diplomat, though his meetings with Straff and Set proved that he could hold his own. What was he? A nobleman who loved the ska. They'd always fascinated him, even before the collapse, before he'd met Vin and the others. It had been one of his pet philosophical puzzles to try and prove them no different from men of noble birth. It sounded idealistic, even a little prim, when he thought about it, and if he was truthful, much of his interest in the ska before the collapse had been academic. They had been unknown, and so they had seemed exotic and interesting. He smiled.
I wonder what the plantation workers would have thought had anyone told them they were exotic.
But then the collapse had come, the rebellion predicted in his books and theories coming to life. His beliefs hadn't been able to continue as mere academic abstractions. And he'd come to know the ska, not just Vin and the crew, but the workers and the servants. He'd seen the hope beginning to grow within them. He'd seen the awakening of self-respect and of self-worth in the people of the city, and it excited him. He would not abandon them.
"That's what I am," Ellen thought, pausing as he walked the wall. "An idealist. A melodramatic idealist who, despite his books and learning, never did make a very good nobleman."
"What?" Ham asked,
stopping next to him. Elland turned toward him. "I've got an idea," he said. "This is the problem. Though I believed in Elendi at first, I later became suspicious. It seemed that he fit the signs, true. But, well, how can I explain this? Could it be that he fit them too well?"
38. How can he possibly look so confident when I feel so nervous, Vin thought, standing beside Elland as the assembly hall began to fill. They had arrived early. This time, Elland said he wanted to appear in control by being the one who greeted each assemblyman as he arrived. Today, the vote for king would occur. Vin and Elland stood on the stage, nodding to the assemblymen as they entered through the room's side door. On the floor of the room, the benches were already growing crowded. The first few rows, as always, were seated with guards. "You look beautiful today," Elland said, looking at Vin. Vin shrugged. She had worn her white gown, a flowing garment with a few diaphanous layers on the top. Like the others, it was designed for mobility, and it matched Ellen's new outfits, especially with the dark embroidery on the sleeves. Her jewelry was gone, but she did have a few white wooden barrettes for her hair. "It's odd," she said, "how quickly wearing these gowns became natural for me again."
"I'm glad you made the switch," Ellen said. "The trousers and shirt are you, but this is you too. The part of you I remember from the balls, when we barely knew each other."
Vin smiled wistfully, looking up at him, the gathering crowd growing a bit more distant. "You never did dance with me."
"I'm sorry," he said, holding her arm with a light touch. "We haven't had much time for each other lately, have we?"
Vin shook her head.
"I'll fix that," Elland said. "Once this confusion is all through, once the throne is secure, we can get back to us."
Vin nodded, then turned sharply as she noticed movement behind her, an assemblyman walking across the stage.
"You're jumpy," Elland said, frowning slightly. "Even more than usual. What am I missing?"
Vin shook her head. "I don't know." Elland greeted the assemblyman, one of the Ska representatives, with a firm handshake. Vin stood at his side, her earlier wistfulness evaporating like mist as her mind returned to the moment. "What is bothering me?"
The room was packed. Everyone wanted to witness the events of the day. Elland had been forced to post guards at the doors to maintain order. But it wasn't just the number of people that made her edgy. It was a sense of wrongness to the event. People were gathering like carrion feeders to a rotting carcass.
"This isn't right," Vin said, holding Ellen's arm as the assemblyman moved off. "Governments shouldn't change hands based on arguments made from a lectern."
"Just because it hasn't happened that way in the past doesn't mean it shouldn't happen," Ellen said.
Vin shook her head. "Something is going to go wrong, Ellen. Set will surprise you, and maybe Penrod will too. Men like them won't sit still and let a vote decide their future."
"I know," Elland said, "but they aren't the only ones who can offer up surprises."
Vin looked at him quizzically. "You're planning something?"
He paused, then glanced at her. Well, Ham and I came up with something last night. A ploy. I've been trying to find a way to talk to you about it, but there just hasn't been time. We had to move quickly."
Vin frowned, sensing his apprehension. She started to say something, but then stopped, studying his eyes. He seemed a little embarrassed. "What?" she asked.
"Well, it kind of involves you and your reputation. I was going to ask permission, but..."
Vin felt a slight chill. Behind them, the last assemblyman took his seat, and Penrod stood up to conduct the meeting. He glanced toward Elland, clearing his throat. Elland cursed quietly.
"Look, I don't have time to explain," he said, "but it's really not a big deal. It might not even get me that many votes. But, well, I had to try. And it doesn't change anything. Between us, I mean."
"What?"
"Lord Venture," Penrod said, "are you ready for this meeting to begin?"
The hall grew quiet. Vin and Elland still stood in the center of the stage, between the lectern and the seats of the assembly members. She looked at him, torn between a sense of dread, a sense of confusion, and a slight sense of betrayal.
"Why didn't you tell me?" she thought. "How can I be ready if you don't tell me what you're planning? And why are you looking at me like that?"
"I'm sorry," Elland said, moving over to take his seat. Vin remained standing alone before the audience. Once, so much attention would have terrified her. It still made her uncomfortable. She ducked her head slightly, walking toward the back benches and her empty spot. Ham wasn't there. Vin frowned, turning as Penrod opened the proceedings. There, she thought, finding Ham in the audience, sitting calmly with a group of Ska. The group was obviously conversing quietly. But even with Tin, Vin would never be able to pick out their voices in the large crowd. Breeze stood with some of Ham's soldiers at the back of the room. It didn't matter if they knew about Ellen's plan. They were too far away for her to interrogate them. Annoyed, she arranged her skirts, then sat. She hadn't felt so blind since...
"Since that night a year ago," she thought. "That moment just before we figured out Kelsier's true plan. That moment when I thought everything was collapsing around me."
Perhaps that was a good sign. Had Ellen cooked up some last-minute flash of political brilliance? It didn't really matter that he hadn't shared it with her. She probably wouldn't understand the legal basis for it anyway.
"But he always shared his plans with me before."
Penrod continued to drone on, likely maximizing his time in front of the assembly. Set was on the front bench of the audience, surrounded by a good 20 soldiers, sitting with a look of self-satisfaction. As well he should. From the accounts she'd heard, Set stood to take the vote with ease. But what was Elland planning?
"Penrod will vote for himself," Vin thought. "So will Elland. That leaves 22 votes. The merchants are behind Set, and so are the Ska. They're too afraid of that army to vote for anyone else. That only leaves the nobility. Some of them will vote for Penrod. He's the strongest nobleman in the city. Many of the members of the assembly are longtime political allies of his. But even if he takes half of the nobility, which he probably won't, Set will win. Set only needs a two-thirds majority to get the throne."
8 merchants, 8 Ska, 16 men on Set's side. He was going to win. What could Elland possibly do? Penrod finally finished his opening announcements.
"But before we vote," he said, "I would like to offer time to the candidates to make any final addresses they wish. Lord Set, would you care to go first?"
In the audience, Set shook his head.
"I've made my offers and my threats, Penrod. You all know you have to vote for me."
Vin frowned. He seemed certain of himself, and yet... She scanned the crowd, eyes falling on Ham. He was talking to Captain Damu, and seated next to them was one of the men who had followed her in the market, a priest of the Survivor. Vin turned, studying the assembly. The Ska representatives looked uncomfortable. She glanced at Elland, who stood up to take his turn at the front of the lectern. His earlier confidence had returned, and he looked regal in his sharp white uniform. He still wore his crown.
"It doesn't change things," he'd said. "Between us. I'm sorry."
Something that would use her reputation to gain him votes. Her reputation was Kelsier's reputation, and only the Ska really cared about that. And there was one easy way to gain influence with them.
"You joined the Church of the Survivor, didn't you?" she whispered.
The reactions of the Ska assemblymen, the logic of the moment, Elland's words to her before, all of them suddenly made sense. If Elland joined the church, the Ska assemblymen might be afraid to vote against him. And Elland didn't need 16 votes to gain the throne. If the assembly deadlocked, he won. With the 8 Ska and his own vote, the others would never be able to oust him.
"Very clever," she whispered.
The ploy might not work. It would depend on how much hold the Church of the Survivor had on the Ska assemblymen.
Yet even if some Ska voted against Elland, there were still the noblemen who would probably vote for Penrod. If enough did, Elland would still deadlock the assembly and keep his throne. All it would cost was his integrity.
That's unfair, Vin told herself.
If Elland had joined with the Church of the Survivor, he would hold to whatever promises he had made. And if the Church of the Survivor gained official backing, it could become as powerful in Luthadel as the Steel Ministry had once been. And how would that change the way Elland saw her?
This doesn't change anything, he had promised.
She dully heard him begin to speak, and his references to Kelsier now seemed obvious to her. Yet the only thing she could feel was a slight sense of anxiety. It was as Zane had said. She was the knife. A different kind of knife, but still a tool. The means by which Elland would protect the city. She should be furious, or at least sick. Why did her eyes keep darting toward the crowd? Why couldn't she focus on what Elland was saying, on how he was elevating her? Why was she suddenly so on edge? Why were those men subtly moving their way around the edges of the room?
So, Elland said, by the blessing of the Survivor himself, I ask you to vote for me.
He waited quietly. It was a drastic move. Joining the Church of the Survivor put Elland under the spiritual authority of an external group. But Ham and Demu both had thought it a good idea. Elland had spent the better part of the previous day getting the word out to the Ska citizens about his decision. It felt like a good move. The only thing he worried about was Vin. He glanced at her. She didn't like her place in the Church of the Survivor, and having Elland join it meant that he, technically, accepted her part in the mythology. He tried to catch her eye and smile, but she wasn't watching him. She was looking out into the audience. Elland frowned. Vin stood up. A man from the audience suddenly shoved aside two soldiers in the front row, then leaped supernaturally far to land up on the dais. The man pulled out a dueling cane.
What?
Elland thought in shock. Fortunately, months spent sparring at Tyndall's command had given him instincts he didn't know he had. As the thug charged, Elland tucked and rolled. He hit the ground, scrambling, and turned to see the beefy man bearing down on him, dueling cane raised. A flurry of white lace and skirts fluttered through the air over Elland. Vin slammed feet first into the thug, throwing him backward as she spun, skirts flaring. The man grunted. Vin landed with a thump directly in front of Elland. The assembly hall echoed with sudden screaming and shouts. Vin kicked the lectern out of the way.
"Stay behind me," she whispered, an obsidian dagger glittering in her right hand.
Elland nodded hesitantly, unbuckling the sword at his waist as he climbed to his feet. The thug wasn't alone. Three small groups of armed men were moving through the room. One attacked the front row, distracting the guards there. Another group was climbing onto the dais. The third group seemed occupied by something in the crowd. Set's soldiers. The thug had regained his feet. He didn't look like he had suffered much from Vin's kick.
Assassins, Elland thought. But who sent them?
The man smiled as he was joined by a group of five friends. Chaos filled the room, assemblymen scattering, their bodyguards rushing to surround them. Yet the fighting in front of the stage kept anyone from escaping in that direction. The assemblymen clogged around the stage's side exit. The attackers, however, didn't seem concerned with them. Only with Elland. Vin remained in her crouch, waiting for the men to attack first, her posture threatening despite the frilly dress. Elland thought he actually heard her growl quietly. The men attacked. Vin snapped forward, swiping at the lead thug with a dagger. His reach was too great, however, and he easily fended her off with a swipe of his staff. There were six men in total. Three who were obviously thugs, leaving the other three likely to be coin shots or lurchers. A strong component of metal controllers. Someone didn't want her ending this fight quickly with coins. They didn't understand that she would never use coins in this situation. Not with Elland standing so close and with so many people in the room. Coins couldn't be deflected safely. If she shot a handful at her enemies, random people would die. She had to kill these men fast. They were already fanning out, surrounding her and Elland. They moved in pairs, one thug and one coin shot in each team. They would attack from the sides, trying to get past her to Elend. Vin reached behind herself with iron, pulling Ellen's sword from its sheath with a ringing squeal. She caught it by the hilt, throwing it at one of the teams. The coin shot pushed it back at her, and she in turn pushed it to the side, spinning it toward a second pair of Allomancers. One of them pushed it back at her again. Vin pulled from behind, whipping Ellen's metal-tipped sheath out of his hands and shooting it through the air by its clasp. Sheath passed sword in the air. This time the enemy coin shots pushed both items out of the way, deflecting them toward the fleeing audience. Men shouted in desperation as they trampled and tried to force their way out of the room. Vin gritted her teeth. She needed a better weapon. She flung a stone dagger at one assassin pair, then jumped toward another, spinning beneath the attacking thug's weapon. The coin shot didn't have any metal on him that she could sense. He was just there to keep her from killing the thug with coins. They probably assumed that Vin would be easy to defeat, as she was deprived of the ability to shoot coins. The thug brought his staff back around, trying to catch her with the end. She caught the weapon, yanking it forward, and jumping up as she pushed against the assembly bleachers behind her. Her feet hit the thug in the chest, and she kicked hard with flared pewter. As he grunted, Vin pulled herself back toward the nails in the bleachers as hard as she could. The thug managed to stay on his feet. He seemed completely surprised, however, to find Vin streaking away from him, holding his staff in her hands. She landed and spun toward Elend. He'd found himself a weapon, a dueling cane, and had the good sense to back himself against a wall. To her right, some of the assemblymen stood in a huddle surrounded by their guards. The room was too full, the exits too small and cramped, for them all to escape. The assemblymen made no moves to help Elend. One of the assassins cried out, pointing as Vin pushed against the bleachers and shot toward them, moving herself in front of Elend. Two thugs raised their weapons as Vin turned in the air, lightly pulling against a door's hinges to spin herself. Her gown fluttered as she landed. "I really have to thank that dressmaker," she thought as she raised the staff. She briefly considered ripping the dress free anyway, but the thugs were upon her too quickly. She blocked both blows at once, then threw herself between the men, flaring pewter, moving faster than even they. One of them cursed, trying to bring his staff around. Vin broke his leg before he could. He dropped with a howl, and Vin leaped onto his back, forcing him to the ground as she swung an overhand blow at the second thug. He blocked, then shoved his weapon against hers to throw her back off his companion. Elend attacked. The king's actions, however, seemed sluggish compared with the movements of men burning pewter. The thug turned almost nonchalantly, smashing Ellen's weapon with an easy blow. Vin cursed as she fell. She hurled her staff at the thug, forcing him to turn away from Elend. He barely ducked out of the way as Vin hit the ground, bounced to her feet, and whipped out a second dagger. She dashed forward before the thug could turn back to Elend. A spray of coins flew toward her. She couldn't push them back, not toward the crowd. She cried out, throwing herself between the coins in Elend, then pushed to the sides, dividing them as best she could, so they sprayed against the wall. Even so, she felt a flash of pain from her shoulder. "Where did he get the coins?" she thought with frustration. However, as she glanced to the side, she saw the coin shot standing beside a cowering assemblyman, who had been forced to give up his coin pouch. Vin gritted her teeth. Her arm still worked. That was all that mattered. She yelled and threw herself at the closest thug. However, the third thug had regained his weapon, the one Vin had thrown, and was now circling with his coin shot to try and get behind Vin. "One at a time," Vin thought. The thug nearest her swung his weapon. She needed to surprise him, so she didn't dodge or block. She simply took his blow in the side, burning duralumin and pewter to resist. Something cracked within her as she was hit, but with duralumin she was strong enough to stay up. Wood shattered, and she continued forward, slamming her dagger into the thug's neck. He dropped, revealing a surprised coin shot behind him. Vin's pewter evaporated with the duralumin, and pain blossomed like a sunrise in her side. Even so, she yanked her dagger free as the thug fell, still moving quickly enough to drop the coin shot with a dagger in the chest. Then she stumbled, gasping quietly, holding her side as two men died at her feet. "One thug left," she thought desperately, "and two coin shots. Elend needs me." To the side, she saw one of the coin shots fire a spray of stolen coins at Elend. She turned, counting on the blue lines from her steel to warn her if the coin shots tried shooting anything else at Elend, and ripped her backup vial of metal from her sleeve, where it had been tied tightly to keep it from being pulled away. However, even as she yanked the stopper open, the vial lurched from her now undexterous hand. The second coin shot grinned as he pushed the vial away, tipping it and spraying its contents across the floor. Vin growled, but her mind was growing fuzzy. She needed pewter. Without it, the large coin wound in her shoulder, its blood turning her lacy sleeve red, and the crushing pain in her side were too much. She almost couldn't think. A staff swung toward her head. She jerked to the side, rolling. However, she no longer had the grace or speed of pewter. A normal man's blow she could have dodged, but the attack of an allomancer was another thing.
"I shouldn't have burned Duralumin," she thought.
It had been a gamble, letting her kill two assassins, but it had left her too exposed. The staff descended toward her. Something large slammed into the thug, bearing him to the ground in a growling flurry of claws. Vin came out of her dodge as the thug punched Orsir in the head, cracking his skull. Yet the thug was bleeding and cursing, and his staff had rolled free. Vin snatched it up, scrambling to her feet and gritting her teeth as she drove the butt of the staff down into the man's face. He took the blow with a curse, swiping her feet out from under her with a kick. She fell beside Orsir. The wolfhound, oddly, was smiling. There was a wound in his shoulder. No, not a wound. An opening in the flesh, and a vial of metal hidden inside. Vin snatched it, rolling, keeping it hidden as the thug regained his feet. She downed the liquid and the flakes of metal it contained. On the floor before her, she could see the shadow of the thug raising his weapon in a mighty overhand blow. Pewter flared to life inside of her, and her wounds became mere annoying buzzes. She jerked to the side as the blow fell, hitting the floor, throwing up bits of wood. Vin flipped to her feet, slamming her fist into the arm of the surprised opponent. It wasn't enough to break the bones, but it obviously hurt. The thug, now missing two teeth, grunted in pain. To the side, Vin saw Orsir on his feet, his dog's jaw hanging unnaturally. He nodded to her. The thug would think him dead from the cracked skull. More coins flew at Elend. She pushed them away without even looking. In front of her, Orsir struck the thug from behind, making him spin in surprise, just as Vin attacked. The thug's staff passed within a finger's width of her head as it smashed into Orsir's back, but her own hand took the man in the face. She didn't punch, however. That wouldn't do much against a thug. She had one finger out, and she had incredible aim. The thug's eye popped as she rammed her finger into the socket. She hopped back as he cried out, raising a hand to his face. She smashed her fists into his chest, throwing him to the ground, then jumped over Orsir's crumpled form and grabbed her dagger off the ground. The thug died, clutching his face in agony, her dagger in his chest. Vin spun, searching desperately for Elend. He'd taken one of the fallen thug's weapons and was fending off the two remaining coin shots, who had apparently grown frustrated by her pushing away all of their coin attacks. Instead, they had pulled out dueling canes to attack him directly. Ellen's training had apparently been enough to keep him alive, but only because his opponents had to keep an eye on Vin to make certain she didn't try using coins herself. Vin kicked up the staff of the man she'd just killed, catching it. A coin shot cried out as she growled and dashed toward them, spinning her weapon. One had the presence of mind to push off the bleachers and launch himself away. Vin's weapon still caught him in midair, throwing him to the side. The next swing took down his companion, who had tried to dash away. Elend stood breathing heavily, his costume disheveled.
"He did better than I thought he would," Vin admitted, flexing, trying to judge the damage to her side.
She needed to get a bandage on that shoulder. The coin hadn't hit bone, but the bleeding would...
"Vin!"
Elend cried out. Something very strong suddenly grabbed her from behind. Vin choked as she was jerked backward and thrown to the ground. The first thug. She'd broken his leg, then forgotten... He got his hands around her neck, squeezing as he knelt above her, his legs pressing against her chest, his face wild with rage. His eyes bulged, adrenaline mixing with pewter. Vin gasped for breath. She was taken back to years before, to beatings performed by men looming above her. Cayman and Reen and a dozen others.
"No,"
she thought, flaring her pewter, struggling. He had her pinned, however, and he was much larger than she was. Much stronger. Ellen slammed his staff against the man's back, but the thug barely even flinched. Vin couldn't breathe. She felt her throat being crushed. She tried to pry the thug's hands apart, but it was as Ham had always said. Her small size was a great advantage to her in most situations, but when it came down to brute strength, she was no match for a man of bulk and muscle. She tried pulling herself to the side, but the man's grip was too strong, her weight too small compared with his. She struggled in vain. She had duralumin still. Burning it would only make other metals vanish, not the duralumin itself. But last time, that had nearly gotten her killed. If she didn't take the thug down quickly, she'd be left without pewter once again. Ellen pounded, yelling for help, but his voice sounded distant. The thug pressed his face almost up against Vin's, and she could see his fury. At that moment, incredibly, a thought occurred to her.
Where have I seen this man before?
Her vision darkened. However, as the thug constricted his grip, he leaned closer, closer, closer. She didn't have a choice. Vin burned duralumin and flared her pewter. She flung her opponent's hands aside and smashed her head upward into his face. The man's head exploded as easily as the eyeball had earlier. Vin gasped for breath and pressed the headless corpse off of her. Ellen stumbled back, his suit and face sprayed red. Vin stumbled to her feet. Her vision swam as her pewter dissipated. But even through that she could see an emotion on Ellen's face, stark as the blood in his brilliant white uniform. Horror.
No, she thought, her mind fading. Please, Ellen, not that.
She fell forward, unable to maintain consciousness. Ellen sat in his ruined suit, hands against forehead, the wreckage of the assembly hall hauntingly empty around him.
She'll live, Ham said. She actually isn't hurt that badly, or, well, not that badly for Vin. She just needs plenty of pewter and some of Sazed's care. He says the ribs aren't even broken, just cracked.